I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. 2 years ago, the Trump administration began the process of separating thousands of migrant parents from their children at the U.S.-Mexico border. But within the United States itself, family separation continues, with undocumented parents being deported to countries many of them haven't been to in years.
What good came out of my husband being deported? And is the country a safer place? What good came out of it?
That's Celeste Hernandez, whose husband Pedro was deported to Mexico by the U.S. government in 2017, despite having a green card application in the pipeline. The Trump administration considered Pedro a, quote, repeat immigration offender, having crossed the U.S. border 3 times without the proper documentation. And that triggered a visit from immigration officials who then deported him. Losing her husband meant Celeste also lost a critical source of income for the family, something that happens to many mixed-status families when the main breadwinner is deported.
The only thing that I know is me, the boys, my kids, our friends, the family sits in disbelief, struggling, unnecessary struggle, unnecessary suffering of the separation. Unnecessary worry.
Celeste's family is not alone. An analysis from the Marshall Project and the Center for Migration Studies shows that about 6 million American children in the United States live with at least one undocumented family member at risk of being deported. And today, the Supreme Court sided with the Trump administration to quickly deport some immigrants in the United States without seeing a judge. Julia Preston is a contributing writer for the Marshall Project, and she interviewed Celeste and 2 other families.
We tried to show how broad the scope is of the families that could be subject to deportation. There are 6 million American citizen children in the United States who have a parent who is undocumented and could be deported. We found that when a breadwinner is taken out of a family, the income of a family drops by almost half. So the economic impact on these families is potentially devastating. And we know from Immigration and Customs Enforcement that just in 5 years, up to 2018, more than 230,000 parents who were deported said they had U.S. citizen children. So our purpose here was to really focus on the impact on American families and American children of these deportations, this devastating, lasting impact.
A lot of times when we talk about undocumented folks who are here in this country, we refer to them as this mass of millions of people. But your work, you went and really profiled 3 families for the story in Ohio. We're about to hear some audio from Talia Moctezuma, whose mother, Esperanza, was deported to Mexico. And here's Talia describing some of the immediate feelings she had when her mother was taken away.
The house was just like, it didn't have like that vibe that my mom would give to it. Like, it was just so like, it felt cold. It felt dark. Like, there wasn't just like, we needed my mom there. And we still do to this day. Like, I still feel that vibe where it's like cold and like, it's just dark. When they said that she's getting on a plane and that she's leaving, like, that just like, it hurt really, really bad. I felt like that shouldn't happen, because like, if they're taking a mother away from a child, like, the child should at least like hug her, say her goodbyes, like something. And it just, I was so like angry at like the whole system.
Julia Esperanza had 4 daughters. One of them was Talia, who were left in the United States. What do we know about the psychological effects that Esperanza's deportation had on her children?
These 4 American teenagers were cast adrift. Their father is a very loving man, but he had to work just to keep the family afloat. And he could rarely be home. And over the course of 2 years after Esperanza was deported, two of her younger daughters tried to commit suicide. In one instance, Esperanza was actually on the WhatsApp video in Mexico with Talia as one of her daughters was unconscious in a suicide attempt. And Esperanza had to talk her daughter through the process of saving this girl's life and getting her to an ambulance and getting a relative to take her to the hospital. And then it happened again. These young girls just felt so bereft that their mother, who had been a very hands-on, very loving and caring mother, had been deported and was separated from them.
You can hear a lot of that in Talia's voice when she speaks to you. Julia, you also write about Alfredo Ramos and his family. What happened when Alfredo was deported to Mexico?
Alfredo was a case of an immigrant who self-deported. So ICE started to come after him after many years. Alfredo never had a criminal record. He had been a very good and caring father, and he'd been in the United States for decades. And after he was a target for ICE, he decided to leave on his own so that he would have some prospect of coming back to be with his kids someday. And in León, Guanajuato, about a year after he left the United States, he was gunned down, shot 27 times on a street in Mexico in what the police in Mexico determined was a case of mistaken identity. The gunmen left a note indicating that they thought that he was a rival trafficker. And so two American citizen children, both of whom are really superstar kids, have lost their father. Again, for no discernible benefit.
Julie, I want to play more audio that you shared with us. This is an interview with Celeste Hernandez, whose husband was deported to Mexico. Let's take a listen.
I'm a prisoner in my own home, and we live a personal hell. This is awful because there's no reason for this to be going on. The man did everything. So basically, everything he worked for was to make himself legal, an American. And we did it, and we did it, and, you know, working 7 days a week, both of us, paying and paying and paying. I was like, well, one day this is going to be okay. All of this is going to be okay. We're getting there. We're getting there. We're getting there. Boom. Get out. And I'm left to put the pieces together.
It's hard to listen to that tape without getting emotional. Julia, tell us about Celeste Hernandez and her son Juan and the economic impact of her husband's deportation.
Celeste's son Juan is 30 years old. He was born with severe cerebral palsy. He is in a wheelchair. He can't talk. He can't feed himself or move without care. And when Pedro Hernandez was in Ohio with Celeste, he traded off the care of this disabled son so that both of them could work. And one of the things that you hear from Celeste in that clip is how close they were to actually getting a legal status and a green card for Pedro. They had been married. He had been checking in with ICE. He had an approved green card. They were just waiting for the last step of his process to become a legal permanent resident when the Trump administration decided to deport him. Now Celeste can't work. She's at home all the time taking care of her son. And they have also a son named Luis, who's now 11 years old. This is Pedro and Celeste's son together. He is missing his father. And their entire communication with Pedro, who's now in Acapulco, Mexico, is via WhatsApp when there's Wi-Fi where Pedro lives. And so this is just, this family is devastated for no reason, really, that I could discern. And it's not just the damage to the family, but in this case, there was also a shift of this family, hardworking family, never wanted to take public benefits. Now Celeste is entirely dependent on public benefits.
So, Julia, how do these deportations play into the larger pattern of the Trump administration's immigration policies?
This is family separation on a massive scale and much more enduring than the family separation policy that we saw with the Trump administration at the border in 2018. These are families that are separated in a permanent and very devastating way. And one of the things I hope to accomplish with this story was to get people to start to think about mass deportation as a public policy and its impact on American communities. We're not talking about border enforcement anymore with these stories. We're talking about what we call mixed status families. There are millions of children in the United States who have a parent who could be subject to this deportation. And the long-term impacts are not dissimilar to what we have talked about in communities that have experienced mass incarceration. And so I'm hoping that with this story that we can start to also talk about the aftermath of mass deportation, which is still going on and has been going on for many years in this country.
Julia, to that point, part of that, those deportations under the Obama administration, one of the things that he was criticized about most by immigrant activists and Latinos more broadly was just his take on deportations. What's different now than what happened under the Obama administration?
At the end of the Obama administration, President Obama was making an effort to focus deportation on serious criminals, people who posed real national security threats. And when President Trump took office, he eliminated the rules that created those priorities. And now under President Trump, any person who is out of immigration status can be deported. In the three cases that I wrote about, in all three cases, they had been given dispensation and the possibility of fixing their status in some fashion under President Obama. And President Trump took that opportunity away and decided to deport them instead. And so even though President Trump's overall numbers of deportations are not as high as the peak years of President Obama, the numbers of people who are being deported who have no serious criminal record at all or and pose no threat to public safety, those numbers are going up every year.
Julia Preston is a contributing writer for the Marshall Project covering immigration. Julia, thanks so much for your work.
Thank you for speaking with me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.